Chapter 52. The Fake IDs, Part 1. July 10th, 2013 was a particularly windy day at San Francisco International Airport. Powerful gusts of air rattled planes as they came in over the bay. On some passenger flights, the luggage in the hold was jostled around, and on the mail carrier planes, packages and envelopes were shuffled to and fro. But when a Canadian mail flight came in for landing, the wind gusts seemed to stop for a brief moment, and the wheels touched down smoothly on the tarmac. The plane came to a stop, and the cardboard boxes in the hull, filled with envelopes, made their way to the Customs Mail Center at SFO. Inspectors unloaded the boxes one by one and unloaded their contents onto different conveyor belts, all destined for small towns or big cities across the United States. The mail handler on duty that day unpacked one of the boxes, reaching for a pile of square envelopes that had remained close together throughout the journey from Canada. Individually, each of those square envelopes was not suspect, but together, as a group, something wasn't right about them. What stood out to the mail handler was that the envelopes were exactly the same shape and size, and the handwriting on their fronts was definitely the same, a jagged scribble that had been hastily carved into the labels. But curiously, the return addresses and names on the envelopes were all slightly and strangely different. One was sent from a Cole Harris who lived in Vancouver. Another was sent from Arnold Harris at a different address in Vancouver. And a third was from Bert Harris in still another corner of Vancouver. Three Harrises, all from different areas of Vancouver, all with the same handwriting on the same size envelopes, was not only strange, it was suspect. To top off this curiosity, the letters were all addressed to different people in America, including one being sent to an Andrew Ford, who lived at 2260 15th Avenue, right there in San Francisco. The mail handler grabbed a seizure form, filled out the appropriate boxes, and then sliced open the envelopes to see what was inside. Ross had been working around the clock on the site, trying to manage all of the new issues that kept arising, some from disgruntled customers, others related to employees who still weren't working to their full potential, hackers, dealers who were being arrested by the feds, and packages that were being seized or stolen somewhere along their routes. He was also gathering anti-law enforcement intelligence from someone called Kevin, who told him that the feds were starting to arrest some of the biggest vendors on the site. Luckily, Ross was safe from all this chaos, hiding out as Josh in his sublet near the Outer Sunset, and able to work around the clock without any questions from his roommates. Though he did take a few breaks to watch Louis C.K. comedy clips and V for Vendetta again, and to read books with libertarian messages that reminded him of his mission. With the confidence Ross now felt, he had started to become stricter with his employees, constantly lecturing some of them to work more productively. "I can do better," one underling nervously acknowledged after a recent lecture. To which Ross replied, "I'm sure you can." Ross, behind the elusive and fearsome mask of the Dread Pirate Roberts, had also decided to do his first interview, hosting a Q&A session with an intrepid reporter from Forbes, Andy Greenberg, who asked DPR questions about the site and its mission. Ross decided to do the Q&A as a text chat, so he could run every question by Variety Jones and the two could answer them together. It was the perfect opportunity to spread Ross's libertarian message, and more important, it was an opportunity to implement VJ's plan to suggest that there could be more than one Dread Pirate Roberts. When Greenberg asked, "What inspired you to start the Silk Road?" Ross cleverly noted, "I didn't start the Silk Road, my predecessor did." And then he explained that everything was in place. He just put the pieces together. "Oh, apologies, I didn't know you had a predecessor," Greenberg replied. "When did you take over the road from him?" before you announced yourself as the Dread Pirate Roberts?" Ross continued to spin the tale. "It's okay," he wrote back. "This is the first time I've stated that publicly." He told Greenberg that the original creator of the Silk Road was compensated and happy with our arrangement, and that it was his idea to pass the torch, in fact. The interview lasted 4 hours and was the perfect rallying cry for DPR's mission. When Ross wasn't holed up at home on his laptop, barking orders at his underlings, he would go for long walks in the nearby parks, or hang out with his old Austin friends and new San Francisco pals, a nice reprieve from his other worlds. Agent Ramirez had worked for the Department of Homeland Security in San Francisco for more than a decade, and was by all accounts a seasoned veteran. He always paid attention to the details and always knew the right questions to ask the nefarious people who came across his path. In July 2013, he was working several cases and had just received an email from someone at SFO Customs and Border Protection about a group of square envelopes they had intercepted from Canada. The mail, the email said, had all contained fake IDs, or at least what appeared to be fake. Agent Ramirez knew that most of the time customs officials at SFO simply destroyed packages with drugs or fake documents. It was just easier than passing them off to Homeland Security agents. But one of the envelopes had contained nine fake IDs. This was a major red flag. Who needs 9 fake IDs? 1, sure. 2, the agent could understand. But 9? The addressee on the particular envelope that was supposed to receive the IDs was an Andrew Ford, who apparently lived at 2260 15th Avenue in San Francisco. While the IDs were perfect copies of driver's licenses from New York, California, Colorado, and the United Kingdom, they all appeared to have a variation of the same person's face on them, a white man with hazel eyes who stood 6'2" tall and was born on March 27, 1984. In some pictures, the man had a thick beard that had been photoshopped on, and in others he was clean-shaven. This was very unusual, Agent Ramirez thought, and after inspecting the documents further, he decided he would go out to the 15th Avenue address and try to find Andrew Ford to question him about the fake licenses. While months earlier Ross had sworn off Julia, vowing never to speak to her again for telling Erica his secret, he was still undeniably attracted to her. So after they reconnected, he invited her out to visit, a weekend of romance and diversion that Ross needed to take the edge off things. It was at least a month before she'd fly out to San Francisco, so he had time to work out the details, but it was highly unlikely that he'd bring her to his sublet. The home along 15th Avenue where Ross was subletting wasn't much to look at. It was a medley of Spanish elements, with a white exterior and brown terracotta roof, combined with 5 whatever was on sale at Home Depot that week windows in the front of the house. The front door was glass, and the front yard was a pathetic patch of stark green plants that stood about 6 inches tall. Ross, being Ross, didn't care how things looked. For him, it was all about the privacy of the house, which was close to the edge of the city, near the beach. Agent Ramirez looked at the map on his phone as he pulled up to 2260 15th Street in San Francisco. He parked and then scanned the building, wondering if Andrew Ford was home. The house was situated in DeBow's Triangle, smack in the middle of the city, and was a long rectangular shape, painted blue and gray on the outside. There was no yard in the front, and the entrance to the house was a thick wooden door. Agent Ramirez spent several hours staking out the place, waiting to see if the man in the fake IDs would walk outside to check his mailbox so they could talk to him. But he never showed up. So the agent got out of his cruiser, and knocked on the bright blue door with one hand, as he held a photo of the fake IDs in the other. The packages Ross had been waiting for should have arrived days earlier, but they still weren't there. He had walked down the orange brick steps to check the mailbox daily, but nothing. Of course, he wasn't looking for mail that had his name on it, but rather anything that had been sent to Andrew Ford, the man Ross was subletting his room from, and that had come from Vancouver. The Canada Post website wasn't much help either. When Ross typed in the tracking number he had been given for the packages of fake IDs he had bought, all he could see was that the envelope was still in transit. After Agent Ramirez waited for a few minutes, the door to 2260 15th Street opened, and an older Asian man stepped outside. "Hi, my name is Agent Ramirez," the officer said. "Is Andrew Ford home?" The older Asian man looked at Agent Ramirez, assuming that he was trying to sell him something, and tried to shoo him away. "No," the Asian man yelled angrily. "No, he no live here." The agent asked again, "Andrew Ford?" This time holding up a photo of 9 fake IDs, each of which had a picture of Ross Ulbricht on the front. "Is there an Andrew Ford who lives here?" "No," the Asian man vehemently responded, quickly closing the door in his face. "Now go away." Just as Ross didn't talk to his roommates, he chose not to talk to his neighbors either. He just stayed in his room, working on his laptop. If he had talked to the people who lived next to him on 15th Avenue, he would have heard the horror stories about packages getting muddled up in the mail. He might have even heard the tale about the history of the street he lived on. The story about how in the late spring of 1909, the mayor of San Francisco had set up a commission to renumber the houses and roads of the city after years of confusion over the similarity between the streets and avenues. While the commission was started with noble goals, it set entire neighborhoods into feuds with one another, with residents arguing over which streets would be renamed and which would not. In the end, the numbered streets and the numbered avenues remained unchanged. As a result, packages that were being sent to 15th Avenue sometimes ended up at addresses on 15th Street, and envelopes that were mailed to people on 15th Street sometimes ended up at homes along 15th Avenue. And in mid-July 2013, an agent from the Department of Homeland Security ended up at the wrong address too, accidentally searching for the man who had purchased 9 fake IDs at 2260 15th Street, instead of the address that had been written on the envelope, 2260 15th Avenue, the address where Ross Ulbricht lived.